My dear friend, it is not difficult to answer the question, how much are you worth? If you are thinking only of material possessions, a man can, without much difficulty, add up how much he has in the bank, in stocks and bonds, in real estate, and in other assets, and he will soon know how much he is worth in dollars and cents. But is that all there is to it? Is a man's worth determined exclusively by what he has in his purse? Suppose he had less, would his worth be correspondingly less? Suppose he had no material possessions to speak of, would his worth be altogether negligible? What really does constitute a man's true worth? Surely not what he has laid up away, what he's laid up in his coffers. It would never occur to anyone to ask, how much money was Abraham Lincoln worth? How much money was Beethoven worth? Or the poet Shelley? Or Professor Einstein? Their possessions had nothing to do with their real worth. Their service to mankind. There are, of course, people who think, as someone put it, that they're worth a lot of money just because they have it. Or as the renowned Jewish humorist Shalom Aleichem said, if you have money, you're wise, you're handsome, and you can sing. But that, of course, is the private, wishful self-estimate of certain people. A few men go along with it. And when such people lose their money, as frequently happens in our uncertain world, they themselves must come to look upon themselves as worthless. The prop of their self-esteem and their self-evaluation has been knocked from under them. Their own standards condemn and humiliate them. People who hold such standards, standards of money, material possessions, financial success, people who hold to such standards of human worth commit two gross follies. They employ, as it were, a magic mirror which enlarges and dilates and inflates them, and which diminishes and reduces all other people. Their false lenses distort true human dimensions. And what is worse, with these lenses of theirs, they frequently fail to see other people altogether. They see only themselves. There was an eminent Hasidic leader, Nachman of Bratslav, who used to tell his disciples, a small coin held before your eye will hide the biggest mountains. Through the clear glass of a window, another Hasidic leader was fond of saying, through the clear glass of a window, one can see men, women, children, one can see the whole world. But through a glass which has been backed with a coating of silver, that is through a looking glass, one sees only himself. But a man who sees only himself is self-imprisoned. He may be worth a lot of money, but he has paid too high a price for it. As a human being, he has made the mistake of settling for much less than he could have had. Because there are so many wonderful worlds which are open to a man, which are open to this man. But he closed the doors upon all of them, and in his acquisitive eagerness and concentration, he, so to speak, sequestered himself in only one world and spent all his days and all the energies of his life in that one world. How much then is such a man really worth when you count his losses against his gains? Is such a man rich in self-respect, in friends, in the esteem of men, in the love of wife and children? Has he filled his mind with the treasures of learning? Has he filled his heart with the wealth of human affection? Has he filled his soul with the glow and the glory of wonderful dreams and of fine ideals? And failing in these, what really is his true worth? What other things besides money has he to show for a life of struggle, of pushing and shoving, of clawing and grasping and hoarding? And when his day draws to a close and the shadows begin to lengthen, what grateful memories will be his? What satisfactions will he be able to hug to his bosom? What pride will fill his heart? What then, good friend, is a man's real worth? Well, our Bible here gives us a clue, as it does to so many other major human problems. Now, our Bible does not disparage wealth as such, or the acquisition of wealth. It does not condemn a man as who has these things. It does not condemn them as base or sinful. It does not make a virtue out of poverty. Poverty, like suffering, is not desirable for its own sake, although both poverty and suffering can be used in the development of character. It is not necessary to be poor in order to be a saint. It is not necessary to reduce life to rude and threadbare simplicities in order to acquire wisdom or happiness or salvation. wealth, to be sure, has its pitfalls, but so has poverty. Poverty can coarsen a man as readily as riches. The poor man is not always free. The rich man is not always a slave. The real test of character is how a human being reacts to wealth and to poverty. But our Bible maintains that there are greater riches in store for man than gold and silver. Greater riches, far greater. There are, for example, says the Bible, children. Father Abraham, whom God chose to be the founder of our faith, had a vision in which the Lord said to him, "Fear not, Abraham, I am your shield, and your reward shall be exceedingly great." To which Abraham promptly replied, "What wealth can you give me, O Lord, seeing that I am childless? Matitenli, ve'anochi holeich ariri." Nothing that the Lord could give him of silver or gold, of flocks and herds, would be of any account to him, seeing that he was denied an offspring. And when a son was born to him in his old age, the Bible states, "And Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and God blessed Abraham in all things." Adonai berach et Avraham bakol, with everything. Bakol, in all things, in everything, said the rabbis, that means a son. The numerical value of the letters bakol, beis, kof, lamed, is 52. And the numerical values of the word ben, beis, nun, is also 52. So when the Lord blessed Abraham bakol, he blessed him with an offspring, the son. Children are an incomparable treasure, the most precious of all the gifts of life. Hinei nachalat Adonai banim, children, sang the psalmist, are the supreme inheritance from God. Sachar pri habaten, the fruit of the womb is a supreme gift. But there are people who pay much less attention to their children than they do to their stocks and bonds, so that their children, when they grow up, do not ever call them blessed. Such people delegate the rearing of their children to the nurse, the maid, the housekeeper, the school, the camp, the street. They believe that they discharge their full duty as parents when they give their children a sort of a cursory overall supervision, and when they pay the bills. On this subject, the rabbis made a very profound observation. It is not the man who begets the child who is his true father, but he who raises him. Amegadel nikra av, velo amolid. From time to time, I hear parents complain, "We don't understand what's wrong with the children today. We raised our children and brought them up. We gave them everything. But now They are strangers to us. And many who do not thus openly complain, nevertheless chew the bitter cud of disappointment in silence. I sometimes wonder what they mean when they say we gave our children everything. Do they also mean we gave ourselves to them? Our boundless and understanding love, we were always there when they needed us. We and no surrogate were the sure and loving focus of their lives. We and they grew through the years into a natural oneness. We were a family always, 7 days a week, and we built a home for them, not merely the hollow shell of a house. We gave them a stimulating environment, a warm climate, a tradition. We gave them proud memories. There are, of course, instances where parents do their very best for their children and give them a full measure of love and care and devotion. And the results are nevertheless disappointing. But by and large, the tree that is planted by a stream of water and carefully and lovingly tended will bring forth its fruit in its season, and its leaf will not wither. Children, then, who do not disappoint, banim lo yeshakru, children who do not disappoint, are to be placed at the very top of the list when you ask the question, how much is that man worth? And included in man's real assets are also his friends, who finds a faithful friend, writes Ben Sira in the Apocrypha, who finds a faithful friend finds a treasure. A friendless man is a very poor man. Regardless how bulging are his money bags and how many servitors he has and how many people do his bidding, his life is an empty wilderness. A true friend brings to one not only the precious gold of a fellowship, but also of stimulation and of inspiration. Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. And there are people who believe that they have friends when they really have only flatterers and hangers-on, people who fawn on them in their prosperity and will desert them in their adversity. Fair weather friends. To have friends, one must not have a lot of money. To have friends, one must cultivate the capacity for friendship. One must be ready to give of himself more than he receives. Ask yourself this question again. How much is a man worth whose name is a hissing and a byword among his fellow men? And how much is a man worth who has a good name among his fellow men? Our Bible says that a good name is worth more than the most precious oil. A good name is more to be desired than great riches. Nifchar shem me'osherav. Mind you, the Bible speaks of a good name, not necessarily of a famous name, a headline name, a society name. It speaks of a name that is sweet upon the lips of men because the bearer of that name is admired and respected due to the integrity of his life, the steadfastness of his character, the goodness of his heart, because that man can always be relied upon. And many a humble man who is possessed of the most modest means may enjoy a good name in the world in which he moves, be that world a large world or a small world. The affection and respect in which such a man is held is worth more to him than all the wealth of the Indies. It is, as Shakespeare put it, the immediate jewel of his soul, the immediate jewel of his soul. And when a man has failed to earn a good name, or has by the conduct of his life forfeited it, he is, I'm afraid, thoroughly impoverished. Job called all worthless and ignoble people B'nai B'li Shame, the nameless ones. Those who have earned no name or those who have lost a good name. B'nai B'li Shame. Think of this when you think of the question, how much is a man worth? To enjoy a good name, to be well thought of by one's fellow men, is worth very much to a person, of course. But to enjoy self-esteem, self-respect, a just pride in oneself, is worth even more. Be sure God dwells with him that is of a humble spirit. Of the greatest of men, Moses, the Bible says that he was humble above all men who were upon the face of the earth. But while our Bible time and again denounces all swaggering haughtiness and all strutting arrogance and praises meekness and modesty, it nowhere deprecates self-esteem, self-respect, and the noble pride which a man may justly take in the good life which he fashioned for himself. The approbation of other men is greatly to be desired, but the approbation of self is even more so. What pride then is yours? Ask yourself that question. Of how many things in your life are you proud? I do not mean boastfully proud, but humbly and gratefully proud. Can you point to the hard struggles of your youth and how you won through the obstacles and drawbacks which you overcame? The hard trials which did not faze you, the temptations to which you did not succumb, the firmness with which you adhere to what you believe to be the right, the sacrifices which you made for children or family or friends or country. If you can think of those things and answer them to yourself, in the innermost recesses of your heart, affirmatively, then you have the sweetest fruits of which a man can eat in this world, which no amount of money can buy. This is what a man is worth to himself. This is his garland of roses, his chaplet of grace. I pass on to another subject, which has to do with a man's worth. The man of learning, the wise man. Our tradition accounted as a very rich man. Tova chochmo mipininim, v'chol chafetzim lo yishvu ba. Wisdom is better than rubies, and all things desirable are not to be compared to her. Now the man of learning is not merely the man who has acquired learning at one time in school or college and has since put it all in deep freeze, but the man who is learning all the time, and not only from books, but learning from his fellow men. Hello, made me call Adam. You learn from everybody and from all the experiences of his life. Such a man whose mind is open, eager, receptive, selective, well-stocked and constantly replenished is indeed a man of great wealth. Of great wealth which he can never lose. Our sages tell a simple story to illustrate this last point. What wealth is lost, what wealth is not lost. There was a ship at sea, and on it were merchants who carried with them rich merchandise to a distant port, to a great city. And they were very proud of their possessions. And on board was also one man who seemingly carried no wares at all. And the merchants, possessed of great wealth, ridiculed this man for his poverty. And one day, pirates boarded the ship and stripped the merchants of all their possessions. And when the ship finally reached port, the merchants disembarked empty-handed, wailing and bemoaning their fate. But the one man whom they had ridiculed disembarked as quiet and composed as ever. He was a famous scholar on his way to an academy in the great city, which had invited him to become its head. He had lost nothing to the pirates. His wealth was all in his head. How much is a man worth? Well, a man is worth all that he has given away, all that he has shared. And remember, one can give away many things besides money, things which are perhaps more valuable to the recipient than money. Guidance and encouragement and comfort and affection. Loyalty. A man is worth all that he has given away of these things to others. How much is a man worth? As much as a man is needed by others. Probably never thought of that. Many of you. A man is worth as much as he is needed by others. A man who is greatly needed is a very rich man. The many who turn to him for counsel, for judgment, for approval, for reassurance, constitute that man's intangible wealth. Indeed, he has much to give, else he would not be sought after. Some men are needed to be the mouth of such as cannot speak, to be the eyes of such as grope in blind darkness, to be the feet and hands of the helpless. And it is in other people's need of him that there are revealed the true measure of a man's importance, the value and the wealth of his life. Well, perhaps, my dear friends, all that I have said may be summed up in a rephrasing of our question, and putting it in another way. How much are you worth to God? When the main account is made up before him who knows all things, both secret and revealed, how much will you, I, all of us, be worth? God is sure to take into account not only our deeds, our acts, our accomplishments, the things we achieved, but he is sure to take into account also our motives and our efforts and our aspirations, what we tried to do but failed to achieve, the high hopes which we entertained but which, in spite of all our struggles and dedication, were never fulfilled. The poet Browning put these thoughts and words in the mouth of Rabbi Ben Ezra. Not on the vulgar mass called work must sentence pass. Not on the vulgar mass called work must sentence pass. But all, the world's coarse thumb and fingers fail to plumb. All I could never be, all men ignored in me, this I was worth to God, whose wheel the pitcher shaped. How much then is this man or that man worth? Perhaps it were best to leave the final answer to God. And in the meantime, to try to live our lives in such a way that we will not someday stand empty-handed before his judgment throne, abashed that we have somehow disappointed ourselves, our friends, and our God.